You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 18 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, May 7th, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are your hosts for our weekly chat about technology and ministry. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. This is a show we've been waiting for.
In fact, this is show number 18. So our show turns 18 today, which is kind of ironic and maybe fitting in this election year as 18-year-olds across the country vote for the first time. We conducted our own little poll over the last month.
That's right. We've been asking our listeners to give us their favorite software picks, free software that's available for download from the internet. And we got quite the response. I'm very excited to share all the different variety of software that people turned us on to with our survey.
Yeah, we had a good group of people submit their three favorites, and we'll spend most of the show today going through a few of those. We don't have time to talk about all of those, but we're going to – Sally's picked five, and I'm going to pick five, so we'll give you 10 of those that were submitted, give you a little bit of what they are and what they do. And hopefully there's something in there that you haven't heard of that might make a difference in your ministry, which is the whole point of the show. So, without further ado, let's talk about free software. And that's one thing that we probably should highlight before we go into any of these things that have been submitted, is how you approach using free software. First of all, there's some cautions that you ought to be aware of when you're thinking about downloading programs from the internet, because obviously there's good programs out there and there are bad programs out there, both what I would call malicious, you know, things that can hurt your computer and do damage to your files or compromise the security of the files on your computer and the information on your computer, and also just kind of generally mess things up, which would cause you to spend time poring over your computer, trying to get things back to the way it was. So there's a couple things that you can think about or should think about when you're downloading free software. Just point number one is make sure you know the source. If you're not familiar with the source of the program, or it doesn't seem to have very much widespread use across the internet, maybe that's something you want to approach a little bit more carefully. A couple things you can check. Two sites that typically carry most of the open source or free types of software programs out there, one of them is download.com. Download.com rates or allows users to rate software, and it also gives a description and a little bit of information about the developer, how long it's been around. So when you're downloading software, it's probably a good idea to look at how long that software has been around, how many people are downloading it, and a little bit of the history of the program itself.
Sure. Sometimes you can find something that sounds like a perfect fit for what you're looking for. But when you start looking at those stats, you know, the user ratings and the number of times it's been downloaded, that can really put things into perspective, make you aware of, you know, how new or how accepted it is mm-hmm. in the community of users that are out there looking for similar software solutions.
A lot of the things that we talk about on the show can be found on SourceForge, and that's a developer community that allows them to share their wares and is a very good place to find software as well. Some of the things that we're going to talk about today are available on SourceForge. So you really ought to be careful, especially if you're downloading software to what I would call a production computer for you, one that you rely on for your day-to-day work. That may not be the best place to download software that doesn't have a long track record or is a little bit on the edge. So it's fairly new. It's a beta release, something like that, because you really don't know what it might do to your system, and you can't afford to spend a lot of time trying to get rid of it or fix what it might have damaged. So just be careful when you're looking at software. Perhaps if you've got another computer at your disposal that you don't use for day-to-day business or for what you do on a day-to-day basis, maybe download it to that particular computer, try it out there, and if things seem okay, then download it to the computer that you normally use for your real work. So just a couple of hints there. If you're running on Windows, there are a couple of things that you should be aware of. One is that Windows allows you to create a restore point. And you do that through the control panel, where you can create a restore point. So if something goes horribly wrong, you can go back in time and restore your system to a point where everything was working correctly. So just a couple tips. Sally, do you do anything else when you think about downloading software?
Probably not enough, Martin. I guess I'm kind of the queen of pushing the button and downloading, and okay, my hard drive is full because of it, but that's the way it goes.
So that's right.
To try new things.
Be cautious, and in this process of reviewing all of the things that our users submitted over the past month, I've downloaded a bunch of stuff, and it was great to see some of the things that our users were suggesting, because a number of them I hadn't heard of, and it was kind of a new experience for me to download some of these things and try them out, and we're going to highlight some of those that we think have some value for our listening audience. So, without further ado, Sally, are you ready to go down our top 10 list?
Sure, I'm all set.
I will let
and
you
I guess,
start.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I added a page to our website that lists all of the user submissions. So as we're talking about this, we kind of categorize things into different categories, and you'll find the same categories out on our wellstech.wells.net website, where you can access links to all the software that we discuss in today's show.
And all of them are there, and all of them have links, and feel free to try them. Now, we cannot vouch for each one because we have not tried each one, so buyer beware, or in this case, they're free. So there's nothing that you're going to spend other than maybe time, and that's valuable as well. So just keep that in mind. But the ones that we've highlighted here, or we'll highlight on the show today, we can vouch for, at least in our experience. So
sure.
All right, Sally, so, what's number one for you? And these aren't in any particular order, at least mine aren't.
Yeah. I had a couple that were interesting in terms of audio-video software options. One is called Jing, and you can actually find that on the TechSmith website. Now, TechSmith is a company that I'm familiar with because I use two of their other products called Snagit and Camtasia Studio. And both of them are related to graphical and video-type production. And Jing is kind of a marriage of the two. And for now, it is available for free from the internet. I don't think they guarantee that it's going to stay a free product. But what it allows you to do is very quickly and easily create screen captures and screen videos, and then share them in a variety of ways via different social websites such as Facebook and that kind of thing, Flickr, or YouTube. And very quick and easy. It sits down in your system tray, so it's pretty much always running in the background on your computer. And it puts a little half circle up in the top toolbar area of your monitor, which you can hover over and get some menu options and very quickly capture something that's on your screen, either an image or a screen capture video. And then there's a variety of ways, once you've started the software, to share that software, that capture, I should say. Fairly quick and easy install. The one thing that it did require is Microsoft Net version 3.0, which is a Microsoft software delivery platform kind of standard. So if you don't have that installed on your computer, part of the Jing install will install that for you as well. And then, like I said, it just kind of houses down on your system tray, and when you want to use it, it's available for you to just very quickly and easily make recordings and share them. So a really nifty tool. Kind of interesting, I read a little bit on the Jing blog, and they said that right now they're just trying to figure out how people are going to use it. They developed this tool. They know it's capable of a lot of different things. And so they're really just looking for feedback and kind of tracking the usage of the software to see what emerges as some of the major uses for this kind of technology.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, Sally. When you think about what it can do, what kind of applications might there be for people in ministry? Had you thought through that at all?
I did give that a little bit of thought, of course, always with the teacher in mind. If you're trying to share some steps for doing something, you can very easily record, you know, the process maybe of updating your website or updating your contributions in your church management software. Or, you know, those kind of things. Record a 2-minute video and you've captured that for anyone that needs to watch and refresh their memory on any of those kind of processes. Mm-hmm. So I think a very powerful tool for a church office or for teachers who are trying to capture those little functions that we do. And watching a video is just a wonderful way. People can do it at their own pace. They can watch it 5 times if they need to so that they thoroughly understand it. It's a great delivery mechanism.
Okay. So Jing, number one. I'm going to stay in the audio-video category, and if you go to our website, you'll see that we have distributed these across different categories to help you, you know, find these as well. Mine is a user-submitted VLC Media Player, and VLC Media Player is for anybody who has had issues, trouble playing media files, whether they be audio or video. Sometimes you'll go to a site, you'll download something or a podcast or whatever it is, whether it be audio or video, and you just can't seem to get it to play in Windows Media Player or in iTunes or something like that. VLC Media Player is kind of the Swiss Army knife of audio video. It will play almost any file. In fact, I was not able to find a file that I could download that I had on my system that it could not play. I guess there is some issue with real video format. That's a type of video format that it cannot play, but almost everything else. Plus, it's cross-platform, so it really doesn't matter what operating system you use, whether you use Windows, a Mac, Linux, anything. It has an install that will play on your system. It has a lot of features with streaming, so if you want to do any kind of streaming, you can stream audio or video with VLC clients on the other end, so it can be a broadcast tool, or you can send a stream to a server that other people can view or listen to. Similar to what we do with our web streaming here at the Synod, you can apply custom skins to it, so you can customize how it looks. It has all kinds of equalizer-type settings that you can change the quality of the sound. Just a good all-purpose media player. To me, it's a great replacement for a Windows Media Player, which has a limited ability to play some kinds of files. It accommodates far more types of media files than Windows can do with its Windows Media Player. So, great little utility. It's pretty lightweight. It just pops up when you click on a media file of any type, audio or video, and it just works. And that's really the point of the player itself. So that is VLC Media Player. You can find a link to it in the show notes.
All right, and before we leave the audio-video category, there's one more that I thought was worth a mention, and that's Microsoft PhotoStory. This is a favorite little application of mine because I love taking pictures and turning them into something, I guess, more dramatic. And basically what this software does is it allows you to bring in your digital images and make them into a slideshow. And besides just bringing them up on the screen, it adds motion to your images. It either zooms in to a specific point on the image or starts zoomed in and moves outward, and you can actually control. It'll give you some suggestions as a starting point, but you can control that zooming in and out on specific images, so you can highlight things of interest, you know, pulling the viewer's eye into things. It allows you to add a musical background to the photo slideshow, and it'll generate that music for you from a number of different genres, everything from country to classical, or you can actually bring in, import your own music files to use as the music background. We've used this during VBS week, where we take a lot of pictures of all the activities of Vacation Bible School. And then at the end of the week, as kind of a culmination, we put all those images into a photo photo story slideshow and put the kids singing their VBS songs in the background and then have that projected somewhere in the church as we're having our VBS closing program. And it's just, it's very emotional almost to watch these images, especially with the flow of the zooming in and things. It just adds a whole nother dimension to your photo slideshow. And, you know, obviously I've seen people do it for weddings and things like that as well. So just a nifty little utility, and so awesome that it's free. It's very easy to learn, and generates a Windows Media video file, which you can play on most any computer, especially if you have VLC Media Player.
That's right.
So just a really fun tool. And I can think of one other use for it. We used it actually a couple of years ago at Synod Convention to all the images at the end of Synod Convention and allow the delegates even to download that and play it in their, you know, local congregations to try and capture the spirit and the excitement of the Synod Convention experience. So just a really neat tool, and one that you'll want to check out, Microsoft Photo Story.
Yeah, it does bring your photos to life. That Ken Burns effect that you were talking about is pretty common along these lines with these slideshows, and it just gives a little bit of a dimension rather than just the kind of the PowerPoint approach where it just shows slide after slide. It does, you know, give some visual interest to it and kind of paints the story, and it's kind of smart about it too, and very sophisticated. So they've done a nice job with that. Mm-hmm. We are going to jump out of the audio video category, and we have one entrant in what we call the browsers category, which is my second pick that I'd like to highlight. And this is a pretty common one, but I don't think we've ever spent much time talking about it on the show, and that's the Mozilla Firefox browser. It's probably the second most popular browser that's out there. It's free, of course, next to Internet Explorer. And I kind of fell in love with it again as I was reviewing it once again. And I use it on and off for different things. But when a user submitted it, I felt that, hey, let me give this a more serious try again. And they're out with version 3, which is in beta, but I didn't download that. I downloaded the latest version 2 program. And a couple of things that I really like about Firefox browsing, and I don't get a chance to use it as much as I would like to, because here in the Synod office we use a lot of Microsoft products, and Internet Explorer typically works better with those kinds of websites. But Firefox, I noticed, was dramatically faster, at least in my experience. And maybe it depends on the website and how they're built. But I felt that I was getting a lot speedier response with Firefox than I was getting with Internet Explorer. It's a little more lightweight. It's supposedly a little more secure, and it's definitely more customizable, I found. There are all kinds of extensions and add-ons that you can get for Firefox, and I just wanted to cover three of those that I uncovered recently that I thought were really neat. I use Gmail, for instance, for all of my personal email, which is an online web-based email client put out by Google, and there are a couple of add-ons for Firefox that enhance Gmail. One of those enhancements forces secure connections. By nature, or out of the box, Gmail is not a secure connection to your email, but this forces an HTTPS connection. So any kind of communication that goes on between you and your inbox or your outbox is now secure, which is a great feature to this Gmail enhancer. And that's within Firefox that it does that. And then you can download all kinds of macros. There's a macro add-on that allows you to use some pre-configured macros or keyboard shortcuts that allow you to make your working within this web application feel more like a client-based application like Outlook or Outlook Express. So that's one of the extensions that's available for Firefox. Another one, which is really cool, happens to be called Cool Iris. It's a company that's put out a number of Firefox extensions, and they've actually done some extensions for Internet Explorer as well. But one of the ones that I really find kind of intriguing and useful is Cool Iris Preview. And essentially what it allows you to do is do picture-in-picture browsing. Any link on a web page becomes a candidate that you can pop up a preview for, a live preview within your Firefox browser to see what's on that website. So you really can get a quick view of what you're going to be clicking on, or if you want to even click on a particular link. So it actually loads the page. It can preload all of the links on a particular page, so it's almost instantaneous. So if you've got a page with 20 links on it, it's going to download in the background a view of all of those pages. You can set this up to have a little icon pop up to each link. So that you can click on that and have this pop-up preview window come up, and you can see what's on that page. You can actually navigate within the pop-up, so you've got almost two browsers working at once. You can have this little thing called Stacks, which allows you to save one of those pop-ups to the side of the screen. A little flyout comes up, and you can do a little bit of tagging in the process. You can stack up, 10, 20, however many sites that you're interested in from a particular page without actually going or navigating to them, so you can go back to them at a future date. Very cool, and works really well within Firefox. The last one is, I thought, ingenious. One of the reasons that I don't use Firefox a lot is because I visit a lot of sites that are customized or optimized for Internet Explorer. Well, what this extension does is called IE Tab, and allows the Internet Explorer engine to work within a Firefox tab. So you can determine if you want to view that website in the native Firefox browser, or open up a tab within Firefox that displays it just like it would be viewed in Internet Explorer with the Internet Explorer engine. You can tell Firefox whenever you open up specific sites, show it in this view. You can open up a new tab or a new window with Internet Explorer, or open up Internet Explorer itself with whatever you've clicked on. So it really resolves some of the issues that you might have with Firefox and it not displaying pages that are designed for Internet Explorer real well. So just a cool extension, and there are thousands of these Firefox extensions available to you. So as I mentioned, Firefox is great if you want to customize your browser. That is my second pick, Mozilla Firefox.
All right, I'm going to move on to the content management category, and maybe folks don't know what content management means, but basically what we're referring to with that term is a website that allows you to manage the website online, to control your content by logging into an administrative area of a website and manage it. And basically you can have websites that you totally control this way. I guess the old way of doing things was coding some HTML on your own computer and FTPing or copying that HTML coding across to the web. But now in this new Web 2.0 age, it's all about controlling your content online, logging into the administrative areas and controlling it. And people do this all the time with their Facebook and MySpace accounts and things like that. Even iGoogle, technically you're logging in and controlling the content on your own websites. But at a bigger view, one of our listeners submitted Moodle software, which is content management software that you can install on your web server or even on a local server to use for an internal intranet type site to do course management, specifically designed to deliver training materials online. And it's being widely used. An amazing story, really, for the Moodle development team, that they set up this software. They're actually from Australia, I believe, or New Zealand, somewhere down under. Mm-hmm. And they created this software in a very competitive market. Other people that are doing course management software have quite hefty licensing fees and things associated with their software. But here came this free and open source option for course management, and the community has just exploded around the software. The reason that I know so much about Moodle is because we're actually using it on the Wells website for our Wells.net University web hosting option. And that's where we are delivering training materials, Wells training materials, either for internal purposes or for global, more broad audiences, things like Sunday school training and parenting courses from our youth discipleship office, and also Bible studies from our evangelism office. So just a very exciting tool that we've seen develop here at Wells, but also one that could have great application, particularly for our schools, I would think, where you could put some of your course material online, not necessarily replacing your face-to-face classes, but enhancing your face-to-face classes with online discussion boards and online quizzes and things like that. There's grade books built into it, and just all kinds of features. You can take surveys, you can have wikis, you can have chat rooms around a particular topic, all of those things on your Moodle install. And of course, you can make your courses secure so that they require an appropriate username and password to get access to them, so they aren't necessarily publicly available. So very, very powerful software, a huge development community around it. Lots of those kind of parallel to that concept of Firefox extensions, lots of those additional add-ons that you can use to customize your Moodle install to do with it, you know, your specific functions that you want to achieve. And I know several of our schools are using Moodle and investigating its capabilities. I know St. Paul's in New Ulm is one that's using Moodle for some of their enhanced learning to supplement their classroom instruction and things. So just a wonderful tool. It's certainly being used at the college level at MLC. They're using it probably for about 50% of their face-to-face classes have online extensions to follow up on those face-to-face classes. So just a wonderful tool, and one that I encourage you to check out if you're in a position to teach anything and think that online teaching would be a way to help enhance that teaching that you're doing.
Now, you will need access to a server, you know, to do this install, and a server that has the ability to serve up web pages to the public. So that's just something to keep in mind as you're getting into Moodle. But definitely a tool that makes a lot of sense for those online educators to use. So Moodle, I'm going to jump into the graphics category, Sally. We got a number of requests or suggestions in that area. One that we already talked about, which is in previous shows, which is GIMP, which is a great image manipulation tool. I'm going to focus on one that's a little more lightweight, but does almost the same thing that GIMP does, and that's called IR Fan View. This has been recommended in the past by some of our listeners, that it's essentially, again, the Swiss Army knife for image manipulation. It really will allow you to view almost any image type, whether it be TIFF, bitmap, JPEG, even Photoshop files you can open up in IR Fan View. So it's just a general-purpose graphics viewer. It allows you to crop or resize or filter pictures or add filters to pictures or images. You can add text. One cool feature is you can do what's called a batch image conversion. So if you wanted to take a number of images that are in a particular format and convert them to another format, let's say you got a bunch of bitmaps or a bunch of TIFF files that you wanted to make ready for putting on the web. So those need to be in JPEG or GIF format. You can point IR Fan View at a directory of images and batch convert them one after the other. You can tell it to resize them. If they're all different sizes, you can make them consistent in their sizing, in their naming conventions, or in their file type. So if you're wanting to convert from TIFF to JPEG, this is a program that allows you to do that. Very, very easy to use, very lightweight, and a great tool for webmasters or people preparing web graphics or any kind of graphics, whether you wanted to put captions on images and put them in a newsletter or a bulletin, prepare them for the web. I get a lot of calls from folks wondering how to resize images, and you see some of these extremely large images that some of our congregations put online. This is a great way to run them through a filter, get them down to the right size that's optimal for web viewing, and very, very easy to use. So that's IR Fan View.
You know, it's kind of funny. You don't anticipate what kind of issues you're going to run into, but this being the first year that we've really put a lot of effort into our congregation and school website, that batch image conversion is probably one of the most powerful things that we've made use of this year. Mm-hmm. Almost every digital camera takes these pictures really, really large.
That's right.
And, you know, if it were up to my folks, they would just put them out on the web that way, and it would take 20 minutes to download, and they'd be too big to see, you know.
Yep.
And so training everyone here to resize their images, and typically it's not one image they need to resize, but 25 of them that they took, mm-hmm. You know, on the school field trip or whatever. So that became just like our best friend. Being able to do those batch image conversions is a really powerful feature. So
did you use our fan view for that?
We didn't, but a parallel kind of product.
Okay, yeah. Most of the for fee types of applications like Photoshop and those kinds of things all do that. But this is the price is right and really easy to use, especially for people who don't do a lot of work with images. So this is a great choice for them. What's
I'm
up gonna next,
jump
Sally?
In.
Go ahead.
Sure. Jump into the education category. I always have my eye out for mm-hmm. things that we can share with our students in our Lutheran elementary schools in particular. And there was really only one entry that fell into this category, but I think just a really neat find, something I wasn't aware of. It's called Stellarium. And you can find it online at stellarium.org. And you might guess from the name that it's actually a planetarium software. Allows you to see all the stars and constellations and things like that in a lot of different views. I downloaded and played with it for a little bit. And as I was working with it, it reminded me a lot of Google Earth. For those of you that have experienced Google Earth, you can basically see the sky at different times of the day and from different locations. So you set, you know, where you want to view the sky, and also different dates, you know. So if you want to see what it's going to look like from your home tonight, you can set it with those kind of coordinates basically and view the sky. But you can also do a lot more things. You can see it as if you're seeing it with your naked eye, or you can see it as if you're seeing it with binoculars or a telescope, so you can zoom in on things. And then it has a really cool feature where you can turn on constellation art, so you can actually see, you know, as you would in a planetarium, the constellations drawn out for you, you know, with the overlaying the star pattern in the sky. Just incredibly powerful software, and very exciting to see that it's available for multiple platforms. So you can download the software for Windows, Mac, or Linux. And I did the PC download, and it was only about 37 meg, which is not a heavy download at all, especially on a high-speed connection, obviously. But just very, very exciting to see, and just imagine the things that you can do with your students in the classroom setting with a planetarium coming to your classroom, basically. I can remember going to the planetarium as a little kid, and here it is right here on my computer now. And just really cool software, Stellarium.
Great. I'm going to jump into the networks category. We had a number of interesting entrants there. The one I'd like to focus on is a tool that allows you to remotely control another computer. This is called UltraVNC. VNC is a technology that's an open source technology that's been around for a long, long time. But basically, it allows you to operate another computer from your computer. And UltraVNC is remote control software for Windows. It's at uvnc.com. What really needs to happen is you need to install the VNC server on the computer you'd like to control. So you obviously need to be able to get access to the computer you'd like to control. And then you install the VNC viewer on the computer that you'd like to work from in controlling that particular computer. And essentially, once you've hooked this up and you type in the address, typically in the IP address of the computer you'd like to control, you see the screen as if you were sitting right in front of that computer that you'd want to control. Sometimes there is a little bit of a lag because it's sending basically screenshots of the server computer, so you have to kind of account for that. But it can work within a network, so if you're a network administrator of any type and you need to control the software or the activity on the remote computer, you can do that. And that works pretty well if you're within a network. It can work across the internet, too. So if you're at a totally different location and you'd like to control a computer somewhere out there, you can do that. So if you need to lend technical assistance to a parent, you know, who's living in Florida or California or some other location than where you're at, you can set that up so that you have the ability to do that. There are some technical things that you have to overcome if you're behind a router, for instance, or if that computer is behind a router, you need to do some port forwarding, which can get a little bit geeky. But basically, you need to tell it what computer on that network that you'd like to forward the protocol to, the VNC protocol. Security is really important if you use VNC. There are a lot of bots out there looking for VNC connections. You have to certainly build in a strong password. Don't just use a simple password that could be broken easily, because essentially you're giving total access to your system. So anybody who has VNC access to a system can do whatever you can do from the console of that particular computer. So there's a lot of different uses for this. Remote technical support is one. You can set up servers that are headless, basically. What I mean by headless is they don't have a monitor attached to them. That's how you get access to operate them or configure them or download updates, etc., etc. There are different features that VNC comes with. Other than remote control, you can transfer files, you can do chats, all kinds of things you can do with Ultra VNC.
And I'm a huge VNC fan, working in Sleepy Eye and supporting, for instance, new users that are employed at the Senate Administration Building. I typically use VNC and take control of their computer and demonstrate things for them. And it's just it's a wonderful tool. I just love it, and pretty amazing to see that I'm operating the mouse on their computer and they can just sit back and watch and listen to me explain and demonstrate things to them.
VNC is also cross-platform. There are different viewers and servers that you can use. So if you're on Windows, you can actually see what's going on a Mac desktop and vice versa. So if you've got a mixed environment, VNC is probably one of the only technologies out there that does cross-platform. But Ultra VNC, I believe, is specifically for Windows. Sally, okay. What's your final selection?
Well, I'm going to turn up the geek level and do my best.
Yeah, I am too. So fasten your seatbelts, everybody.
Right. We're moving into the utilities category. And the utility that I selected to talk about is one called Subversion. And again, this is definitely a geek-oriented option for you. But if you are trying to keep up with your versions of files that you're working with, in other words, when you last saved it, keeping up with sharing files potentially between multiple people, and being able to potentially turn back the clock to a previous version if something goes wrong in a file that you're working with, then this Subversion tool may be an option for you. The thing about it is it's very text-oriented. It's not a graphical interface kind of tool. It's one that you actually do command-line control of, kind of almost a Unix programming kind of language that you use to communicate with the software and tell it you've checked out your version of the file and what your updates were to it when it was last updated and things like that. So if you're looking for or have a need for version control, keeping up with documents and programming files or anything like that, and knowing which versions you've used and when you've done updates, then Subversion may be the product for you. And we'll have a link to it in our show notes.
Staying in the utilities section, my last pick is also a little bit geeky, although it's not so much so that the average user could not download it and get some real value out of it. It's called Glary Utilities. And back in the day when Windows was probably a lot less friendly and came with a lot fewer of these tools, these were absolutely essential, you know, to maintain a healthy system. Not as needed much today, but I found that there's some great little utilities within Glary Utilities that allows you to keep your PC, this is Windows only, healthy. The brains other than the processor in your computer, the software brains of your computer and your operating system, is something called the registry. And that gets out of whack sometimes. And Glary Utilities has a little tool that with one click allows you to fix registry issues. If something's amiss in your computer, it sometimes can be traced back to something, a bad registry item, which is essentially a text file, but it's what the system or the operating system uses to control everything that it does. So this has a registry cleaner. It will repair shortcuts. It will restore used file space or unneeded space that is just holding temporary files, for instance. It has an uninstall manager, so if you've got these pesky programs that the uninstall tool doesn't work or Windows really can't get rid of it, this likely will. It has some security features, a file shredder, so if you totally want to delete every trace of a particular file for security reasons, this can do it. Windows doesn't do that automatically. It can get rid of duplicate files or empty file folders. It will give you a nifty little report that will show you disk usage, and you can see all the files on your computer and slice and dice that report any way you want and actually manipulate those files. So you can see, show me the 10 biggest files on my computer. Show me a list of all the files by size on my computer. So if you've got some disk space issues and you're wondering, why in the world do I have only a gigabyte left on my hard drive, this will show you why and allow you to delete files that you may not need anymore or see what those memory hogs are within your computer. So Glary Utilities. Go ahead, Sally.
I was just going to say, I guess we made it to the end of our list.
We did. And there were many more. So if you want to see all of the submissions that came across the Wells Tech Podcast website, you can go to our site and see those. A number of them we've spoken of before. A number of them we didn't have time on the show to highlight, but some good ones out there. So we've come to the time where we would want to pick a winner. And just a reminder, the winner receives a 1 gigabyte flash drive. And on that flash drive, and I've got it in my hands right now, is the Wells Technology logo. And we're going to send this out to a lucky winner. Remember, when we pick a winner, you have 1 week before our next show to send us an email claiming your prize. So you have to listen this week, obviously. And if we don't get anybody emailing us, then we will pick another name and maybe another winner. So we're going to use a little tool on the internet called, Random Integer Generator. Basically, it's a little website that allows us to generate a random number between 1 and whatever number of contestants we have. Sally's got the list, and we are going to generate this number. You ready, Sally?
I'm all set. I can hardly wait.
Right. And I'm going to generate one number, and that number is the number 2.
Wow, number 2.
Way down
and it
at
would
the bottom.
Be...
Who is that?
That's Danae Whitty.
Danae Whitty. So, Danae, if you are listening, you need to send an email to where, Sally?
WellsTech@wells.net.
And you will be the winner of the Wells Tech, the inaugural Wells Tech
That's right.
contest and a 1 gigabyte flash drive. Congratulations, Danae. All right. Well, Sally, we do have our own picks of the week this week.
That's right. We got to have equal time. We heard about everybody else's picks. So I have one to share this week to a website with TED videos. And let me explain a little bit about that. TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. And it's a kind of a think tank type of group that started in 1984 as a conference to bring together people from all those different worlds and basically give the talk of their lives to tell about their vision or, their life work or whatever in 18 minutes or less. So just some amazingly fascinating videos, and they've begun to share them online at TED.com. And I think there's maybe more than 200 of these videos in the archive now, you know, dating back over the years. And certainly they're, you know, available and can be reposted and shared on the web. And they've been coming up, just different TED videos in my blog reads at various times. And I've watched a few of them, and there's some just fascinating talks out there. But I just wanted to mention one in particular because it has a little bit of a techie tie to us and our needs. And that is one done by a man named Johnny Lee. He's a scientific researcher. And what he's done is basically come up with his own interactive whiteboard, and total cost for his interactive whiteboard solution is maybe $45. And for those of you that have smart boards or active boards in your schools or churches, you know that the price tag for those types of interactive whiteboards that allow you to write on your screen and basically use your finger or a device as the mouse and have complete control of the materials that are projected on your video projection. Those kind of options maybe start at $2,000 and go up, you know, and include, you know, quite a bit of technology and software and things like that. But this fellow, Johnny Lee, took the Wii Remote, which has two features that make it really valuable. One is that it communicates via Bluetooth wireless technology, and the other is that it has an infrared camera and recognizes infrared light. And basically, with a $40 Wii Remote and a handmade infrared pen, which he just, you know, developed with a battery and a little button on a tube, you can use the Wii Remote Bluetooth capabilities to communicate with a computer that has Bluetooth and make your own interactive whiteboard. And of course, I'm married to a really geeky guy, and he saw this video and he just had to give it a try. So I'm here to testify to you that this actually does work. We have a working Wii Remote whiteboard in our school right now. And it is just an amazing thing that for just such a little investment with today's technology, this kind of thing can be possible. So I'll make sure and include a link to the TED video where Johnny Lee demonstrates this. There's TED videos on a variety of categories: technology, entertainment, design, business, science, culture. You can find all different types of categories out there, and certainly some very compelling speeches and things that would be worth your time to watch. So we'll have a link in the show notes.
Thanks, Sally. That is a cool video. I saw that one. My pick of the week is for anybody who has backup heartburn. One of the challenges, I think, of being a computer user is backing up your data. I've tried, I don't know, not hundreds, but certainly at least 10 or 12, maybe 24 backup types of utilities over the years. And none of them really work the way I work, and none of them really are automated. So I've really moved away from backups altogether. That's not to say that I don't back up, but I use different technologies right now than just pure or raw backup. And that's syncing software. Syncing software is a little bit different than backup software because it basically takes a file and makes a copy in another location. And so it's a one-to-one. So there's not compression. It's basically saying, you've got a copy of this over here. I'm going to make sure you have a duplicate over here. And the tool that I'm using right now that I really think is the answer, at least for me at this point, is something that Microsoft makes, and they've had it around for a number of years, and now they're in version 2, and it's in beta, but really solid, called SyncToy 2 Beta. And essentially it syncs your system from one location to the other. The paradigm that they use is you've got a left folder and a right folder. So you have folder pairs. So you say, I'm going to take this folder, and it could be your whole My Documents folder on the left. And then you pick another location for your right folder, and that can be on an external hard drive. It can be on a network server. It can be essentially anything that you want. It can be a thumb drive. It can be anything that you'd like. So once you've set that up, then you can automate that through Windows Scheduler to run at different times or run once a day. I have it running at noon here in my office. And you can have three types of synchronization. You can just do a raw synchronization. So anything on the left is going to be on the right. So anything you have in folder number one is going to be in folder number two. Anything you delete in folder one is going to be deleted in folder two. You can have an echo, which basically, and that goes both ways. On the synchronized side, anything you delete on the right side is going to be deleted on the left. So you can work in two different areas, and it's going to always replicate. The echo type basically copies everything from the left to the right and keeps them in sync. So the left is the source, the right is the copy. And then finally, the one that I use, which is contribute, copies anything to the left, to the right, but it doesn't mean if you delete something on the left, it doesn't delete it on the right. So it essentially is an aggregate backup. So if you accidentally deleted something in your My Documents folder, it's not going to delete it on the right side. So the right side continues to grow and acts as that backup. And you can start over at any point, obviously, and wipe everything out and do a recopy. But it kind of acts as that backup, even for deleted files. So SyncToy 2 Beta. Up next is our Wells.net feature of the week. Sally, do you have something you'd like to tell our users about on Wells.net?
Sure. This week I wanted to share the Fifth Pew from the Front video series. This is a series of family-oriented, basically like a little television show called Fifth Pew from the Front. It's produced by our Wells Adult Discipleship office, and you can go to the website at fifthpew.com. All of the videos are for sale from Northwestern Publishing House, and four of the videos are also published on the Streams video site, so you can watch them online as well. There's a series of six, I believe, so far, of these topical videos that have been produced, covering everything from kind of church expansion issues, like we're looking at building programs and things like that, and how that evokes different feelings in your members and things. The busy time before Christmas, different ways of reaching out with the word, just our busy lives in general. And there's one that was done by the Committee on Relief that relates to natural disasters and our reaction to those as a church community. And it's called Whether or Not. For each of these videos, there's a Bible study that was developed for each. So you can watch the videos and then do a Bible study along with that, and it's actually set up to do over maybe a 5 or 6 week period. So you watch the entire video, and then each week you go back and look at snips from the video and do Bible study around different topics related to the issues that are brought up in the video. So it's great for a family Bible class. There's certainly things that would be appropriate for different age levels, and I was thinking at this time of year it would be a great option for summer Bible class, where maybe we're changing up things a little bit and looking for some different options to give our Sunday school teachers some time off in the summer or that kind of thing. This might be a good option. One thing you want to consider is if you have people that are hard of hearing, obviously it's an audio component to this, so make sure that you've accommodated for those that are hard of hearing to be able to hear the video production. But just a wonderful resource available to us, and I encourage you to check it out at fifthpew.com.
Yeah, excellently done, and I've been looking at those over the years, and just a wonderful blessing to our congregations who have used them, and now they're available for free online.
Mm-hmm.
Community feedback. We had so many that we can't even share them all with you. Don't have time to do that today, but Sally, who's talking to us this past week?
Well, I definitely wanted to mention an email that we received from Pastor Stephen Daly. Pastor Daly is at St. John's in Riga, Michigan, and he wrote to follow up on our show 15 when we talked about Linux and open source solutions. Particularly in that show, we were looking at using options for school computer labs, but Pastor Daly shared some incredible uses that he has for Linux. He says, "I've been using Linux and open source software for almost 4 years. Now I interact almost completely with my computer through open source software. I have my family using Linux at home." He says he writes his sermon every week on Linux, keeps his calendar on Linux, keeps his worship schedules in Linux, writes all of his Bible classes in Linux, downloads and listens to podcasts on Linux, and all of his web surfing and email is done in Linux as well. So he's pretty much covered the full gamut of computer use there. And he's doing it all on Linux. And just a reminder that Linux is a free operating system solution. So very economical option to use. And Pastor Daly goes on to say that he really wished more pastors and churches would consider Linux for their computing needs. Most of the time, you can keep older computers useful with Linux and even expand your network services by using Linux on an old machine as a file server or a local test server for your church website. He closes by saying, I hope you consider more shows with these resources being mentioned, because often it is just good stewardship. And so just an excellent kind of comprehensive look at different ways that you can use Linux and open source solutions to make really great use of some older machines, or just to be a wise steward of your monetary resources in terms of technology.
Yeah, Sally, maybe, and thank you, Stephen, for the email. I think maybe we would devote a show to Linux types of issues. There are certainly many possibilities, and we've talked a little bit about it in the past, but never really devoted a show to it. So let's put that on our list, and maybe we can get back to those kinds of Linux topics for those that are interested in a later show. We also had communication from Pastor Tim Wagner from Elgin, Illinois. And he's wondering if we could devote a show to MIDI technology in music, both the hardware and software side of things. And I think that's a great suggestion, where a lot of our congregations, especially our smaller ones, but now some of our larger ones, definitely are using MIDI, which allows for digital music to be played within the service, you know, in an automated fashion. And there's lots of things that we could talk about there. And I even have in mind a number of guests that we could have on the show that are working in that field and can lend some great practical experience to using MIDI within a worship service. So great suggestion, Tim. We will put that on our list as well.
And finally, I wanted to mention an email we received from Dr. Jim Grunwall, who's at Martin Luther College, and he had a wonderful suggestion to improve our show, and something we're going to try to add starting with this show, and that is to add some time markers to our show notes so that people who maybe want to jump to a particular section of the show can reference our show notes and see when that section comes up in terms of the timing of the show. So
not that they would ever want to skip any section of this show, but in case you're crunched for time or want to go back as a reference and find a particular area of the show to listen to, this would be a great way to do it, right?
That's right, Martin.
So we're going to put that great suggestion, Jim. I think that's helpful. And so we'll give a little bit of timestamp on the show notes so that you can jump right to a section that you're interested in. Thanks.
Before we close, Martin, I did want to mention that we've got some streaming services coming
That's
up
right.
next weekend at Martin Luther College. Our crack tech staff is going to be on site at MLC covering the MLC commencement concert next Friday night. That's May 16th, starting at 7:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time. And then on Saturday, exciting services. The commencement service will be at 10 a.m. Central Time, and the call service for our MLC graduates will be at 2:30 p.m. Central Time. That's Saturday, May 17th. You can get to all of those on our Streams website at streams.wells.net, and just click on the Live tab.
And there you've got the schedule for all the upcoming live streaming events. We're also streaming from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary the following week. So join us for that. We're excited about that. Well, that's it for our show this week. Man, we stuffed a lot of stuff in there. We'll return with a regular interview next week. We'll be talking with Dan Numminson from Wisconsin Lutheran Child and Family Service about some neat things they're doing with online and video-based counseling. So tune in for that. We'll close our show this week by featuring the Wells group called Koine. We've heard their music before. The song that we'll be playing for you now is Now Rest Beneath Night's Shadow from their album Koine 2. KoineMusic.com is their website, so give them a listen. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
Now rest beneath night's shadow, the woodland field and meadow. The world in slumber lies, but you, my heart, shine in heaven, where crowns of gold are given to all who faithful prove and true. And through the night.